You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Wednesday evening. Everybody, how you doing? PodcastDetroit.com. The name of the show is American Whiner. My name is Alex, and we are on our Wednesday show, as I just mentioned. That means it's friend time. My friend this week is Mr. Don Woolley, one of my best friends. How are you tonight, Don? Let me turn on your mic.
Oh,
there
good.
We go. There we go.
Oh,
sorry about that.
How hospitable.
Yeah. Thank that's you. The first time that's happened. And so now that we've got the awkward intro out of the way.
It's fantastic.
Let me stop the music. And there we go. All right. Now I think we're good. Everything's encoding. Lock talk's on. Yes, there's nothing wrong. So we were good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming. You are the reason that this happened, actually, because you used to be on a podcast about a year ago called Geekopedia.
Yeah, I was a regular guest.
You were a regular guest on Geekopedia, and I listened to that podcast, and that's how I first heard of PodcastDetroit.com. So you are the reason that we are sitting here right now.
Fantastic.
So.
They've got a great place here.
They do.
It's really nice.
They do. It's legit. It's totally legit. All my guests are impressed when they come in. They like the microphones, you know, all those, because a lot of guests are music inclined and studio inclined, so they look and they're like, oh, what kind of mics they got here? Oh, these are cool. And then, oh, there's a free bar. That's even better. So
yeah, the free bar and the tap, that's pretty good.
So let's talk about how we met each other. I've known you since 2009, so going on 10 years now.
We're getting old.
Yeah, we are.
I was old then, but we're getting real old now.
We met through a mutual friend, and we were just kind of acquaintances. Like, I saw you every now and then, I liked you, and, you know, you were a friend of mine, but I wouldn't say that we started really hanging out until you got me into what I am doing now for a living, and it's also what you do for a living.
That's true.
Controls.
Yeah, production controls engineers.
For the automotive industry, and you have been with the same company since you started doing this.
I have. Yeah, it's six years now.
6 years. You started in 2011, wasn't it?
2010 or 11. I don't really know. The time ever since I started has just it's been like an eye blink.
Oh, yeah.
There's no days off.
Yeah.
Long hours.
Yep.
So every day is like Groundhog Day with Bill Murray.
Yep.
I wake up every morning, I drop a toaster in the bathtub with me, hope I fucking die.
No, you don't.
I love it. I love it. I say that because I feel like I should say that because I work 80 to 90 hours a week, but I love my job.
And you have actual talent for it. That's the difference. Like I do it and I'm functional and I can pay my bills with it and that's why I stick with it. But you actually you really care, like, if something goes wrong or if, you know, when you put together these incredibly complicated lines.
I guess, yeah. I mean, in terms of, like, life aspirations, it's like finding out that you're really good at playing spoons, right?
Yeah.
I'm really good at making automotive factories, like, run well. Woo.
Well, but, you know what, man? The car companies and the people that make all the money are very happy about you. You know,
they are. Yeah, if Lee Iacocca was still alive, I'm sure he'd send me a nice letter.
So you've been at it for 6 years. You've been with the same company this entire time.
I have.
You've done a lot of traveling. You've been to Brazil. You'd gone to Brazil.
That was like my first job.
That was your very first job?
That was my very first job. I was actually technically still training, and they come in, they're like, hey, you want to go to Brazil? I'm like, yeah, I want to go to Brazil. That sounds great. That'll be the best thing ever. This job is amazing. And then I get there, and it's a fucking shithole, and everything sucks.
And you were the only guy, too, right? Like, they expected you to get everything running.
No.
No?
No, there were a lot of guys. I was the only one that worked.
Oh, okay. I see.
I mean, it's funny because one of the guys who's working with me now was my first boss down there, but he left. So he was the guy working, and then he left. And they put him on a different project, and we were just fucked. But it worked out well for me because that project was horrible.
Uh-huh.
It was super high energy. You know, I was working 120 hours a week.
Holy fuck. That almost sounds impossible, like physically impossible.
Yeah, you say that, you see people like roll their eyes up a little bit and they're like, how many
days is that?
How many hours are there in a week? There's 168. So I was working the majority of the hours, right? But it was like a sink or swim, you know. I got thrown in the fire and that was good. And then, you know, I've been to Mexico and Mexico's much nicer than Brazil.
Well, you were right next to a volcano when you were in Mexico, right? That was just a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just a year ago. It was beautiful. You know, the people are super friendly. It's unbelievable how hard those people work. You know, they share a lot of values with us. You know, they have, you know, when people talk about a traditional American value and they're talking about a good work ethic and taking care of your family and, you know, like those people got that down pat, you know, like there's some good people down there. I really enjoyed it. I made some good friends.
And you've been in, you're in Toledo right now, and this is actually
exotic Toledo.
Exotic
it's
Toledo,
hard for me
Ohio.
To choose between Mexico, Brazil, and Toledo.
And you've been down there before, and this is actually a good gig for you in Toledo because it's so close.
It's close enough that I can see my friends. I stay in a luxurious shithole while I'm there. It's fantastic. There's no bed bugs, so it's luxury.
Oh, but when I was in Toledo, I had bed bugs one of the.
It doesn't shock me. Have you seen Toledo?
I have seen Toledo. I stayed there. Well, mine was actually in Bowling Green, and I was in this hotel for a week, and actually it was fleas. It wasn't bed bugs. There were fleas in this hotel because I got these.
Oh, well, what are you complaining about? That's fine.
Well, yeah, right? That's what they said. Because my company at the time, I was like, I have to leave. There's these strange bites on my legs, and I don't want to stay here anymore. And I'm like, there's a Hampton Inn like right down the street. Just
what did
pick
your
that
company
one.
Say? Like, stay away from the whoas.
Well, no, they were. The woman, if I remember correctly, she said something to the effect of like, "Oh, that's gross," and then she made it happen. So
okay.
To their credit,
well, that's good. That's good.
But yeah, I moved into an apartment soon after, and I had to have them flea bomb the place because I found one of them. That's how I knew it was fleas because I stripped the bed and I was like, "What the fuck is biting me?" And one of them jumped onto my arm and I grabbed it and it was a little fucking flea. I'd never seen one in real life. You can actually tell it's a flea as you're holding
it. What do they taste like?
I didn't eat it. But I'm sure if I did, you could eat one and not even notice it. It'd be like a dust speck or something. But I put it in a baggie and put it in the freezer in case that I needed proof. And then the apartment complex that I was staying in at the time was very nice about it. They said, we'll bomb it and
that's
don't
good.
Worry about it. So
that's good.
Anyway.
I've been thinking about
good to hear you haven't had to deal with that.
I've been thinking about getting an apartment downtown.
Oh, you have?
And that just completely
obliterated.
Yeah. Well, an experience I had with the traffic down there during a baseball game.
Oh, yeah. You don't even know. I didn't even know Toledo had a baseball team.
I mean, baseball people know that, right? It's the Mudhens.
I guess.
The Mudhens is like probably the most famous non-MLB team. Like, they're probably, aren't they? I don't fucking know. I'm not going to pretend.
Now that you mentioned, I have heard the name Toledo Mudhens before.
Yeah, I don't care about sports ball. So.
Yeah, same here. I believe that was one of the first topics we discussed on the show is I don't know anything about sports.
I'm not going to fucking delve into Philistinism and pretend I know anything about sports ball.
But anyway, so, you know, me and you, like I said, we've known each other for 7-8 years now. And, you know, we try to get together, you know, for dinner or whatever. I'd say a couple times a year at the least.
Yeah,
much you're traveling.
We always say we're going to do it like once a month, but
yeah, we're just too damn busy, both of us. You know,
time just goes by so fast.
It does.
When you start to get older and you think, man, I think it's been a couple weeks since I've seen my buddy, and then you think, and it's fuck, man, it was like Christmas.
Yeah. You know? Yep. So, but we always have our conversations when we get together, always have like the same sort of like phases. You know, we start off with how are you doing and what's up with your personal life for both of us. Then it always shifts. It's never the same, but we will always talk about pop culture, something having to do with pop culture.
Yes.
We're both into Game of Thrones. We're both into fantasy series. And that's actually what your whining topic is for later is
it
a particular fantasy series. And it's a recent adaptation. But politics, we always end up talking about politics, which we're going to avoid, trying to avoid today.
I'd like to not get shot.
Yeah, right. And there, I feel like there's one more aspect to it, and I can never remember what it is. That might be it.
Relationships. A lot of.
We don't really talk about music. In fact, when I asked you to pick the three songs for this episode, you were kind of like, "Dude, I don't really know." Like what?
Yeah, you know what's funny is I don't. When I was younger, I hardly ever listened to music at all, which is so completely opposite of most people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I really only liked fucking gangster rap, and I wasn't allowed to listen to that in my house.
So. I never knew that about you. You like gangster rap? That was like your go-to genre?
Oh, dude, yeah.
I did not know that. I've never known that. Like when you were like in high school, right? In grade school?
Middle school, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So
yeah, like NWA, dude. Like I used to sneak and listen to NWA on a Walkman.
Oh, my God.
So yeah, I would have gotten in so much trouble.
Why?
Because the news media at the time was just going crazy, like, oh, this is corrupting people's minds into hating police officers, which then, you know, I grew up in, like, not the biggest fan of the cops.
Yeah.
I don't even commit any crimes. And, if even a completely innocuous nature, right? Like, I've never been a regular habitual marijuana smoker, and I still fucking hate the fact that they arrest people for having marijuana and things.
Yeah.
So maybe my grandparents were right. Maybe fuck the police did teach me to disrespect the police.
It did have some sort of effect, yeah.
Fuck them.
Well, we actually, one of my, like my third guest or something, I had, his topic was cops. He wanted to whine about cops. So we're familiar with that here. And I'm familiar with it just from knowing you anyway, but, yeah, so.
He's a complex individual.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people who slant the way I do would talk the way I do about police officers, but that's fine.
Yeah, so, but, well, I'm trying to think here because we've covered, you know, we talked about your career a little bit. There, I feel like there's more to get into in terms of, you know, because you've been, like I said, you've been with the same company.
I'm a one-dimensional motherfucker, man. I just work and defecate and eat. Like, I masticate. Masturbate, defecate, and work. Like those are the four aspects of my
personality. I've never heard that. Sounds like a gangster rap album right there. I feel like there, because whenever you talk about it, whenever I ask you like specifically to get into what it is you're doing at work, especially when you're integrating a line or when you're mm-hmm. when you're building the line and writing the code for it, you get so intricate with it, and I can tell like. I'm terrible at integration. That's one thing I've learned over the past, 4 years I've been doing this now. I'm way better at production support than I am at integration. Okay. I can do integration, but I am not – it's just not my thing.
Right. Anybody listening, that means you're writing the code like from the ground up.
Right. Production support is the code's already written. The machine's been running and your job is basically to just keep it running.
Right.
Whereas integration is you build the line, you write the code, you test it, and
which is what
sell
I like
it to
doing.
The customer. Which is what you like doing, right?
I love it. I really don't – I can't say I don't like being left there to support what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like being handed something new. I like being handed really complex things mm-hmm. to figure out because, you know, everybody wants to be creative and not everybody ever finds the outlet that they need in order to feel like they're – effectively creative, right? There's a lot of people that go through their lives that never get that feeling, like that feeling of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to compare it to people who are actually creative, right? Like I'm not saying like I write music or, you know, I've written anything, but there is a certain creativity
definitely
to what we do. And
I remember you bringing that up to me when I started, and you said, this is one of the reasons I suggested this. You might want to get started with this is because you're a creative person, and creativity, you may not realize it at first, but it does play a part in
it
this.
Does.
So.
It does. And, you know, it's different for every person, and mm-hmm. I've never – I've always been, you know, moderately creative, but when I got into this, it was like, you know, someone rang the bell,
mm-hmm.
and I really, like – deeply enjoy when someone tells me that you can't do something and then I make it work and I make it and then they don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of
yeah, that's there's one thing I have learned about doing this. Like, I'm not even, you know, I openly admit I'm not very talented at what I do. I don't have any gift for it. And I've learned most of the people, even that, like, the bosses and the people that we work with have no idea what it is exactly that we do.
None. But I, like, and there are a lot of arrogant people mm-hmm. that do what we do. Like, the, you know, you're a glorified, like, web page writer.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, yeah, it's machine code. But
it's no more complex than making a fucking homepage or something, right? And mm-hmm. and there are people who just think that they are a genius yeah. for what they do, and I love crushing those people. crushing the will out of other human beings has always been a forte. So,
well, some of these guys are, you know, pretty close to geniuses, you know, some of them.
Yeah. Like,
there's a mutual friend of ours that I've worked with a couple times. Worked with him in Toledo the first time.
Yeah.
And he's the type of guy who's
definitely
you know,
a genius. Justin is a smart fella.
Yeah. Well, he does it for fun.
But
that's
he's not
how you know.
Super arrogant either.
Like, no, that's what I was just getting at. Is yeah. some people are, you know, could easily call themselves a genius when it comes to, you know,
right.
And he's not even just the code. He's
everything.
He does this stuff for fun. He builds 3D printers in his basement.
Everything he touches, he's just a master of figuring something out, right? Mm-hmm. Like 200 years ago, he would have been like the wacky inventor in town that solved all the town's problems.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
You know, so now he's just the well-paid genius.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So we've talked about your career. One of the things that we're not going to whine about this necessarily. In fact, this will be a good juxtaposition to what we're going to whine about.
Okay.
Because we have a great adaptation of a series that we love, and then we have a horrible adaptation of a series that we love.
Yes.
And the good adaptation, which.
And if you would have taken bets,
uh-huh.
you would have you bet for the reverse.
Yeah,
like, I
probably.
I would have said they could never, ever, ever adapt Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It would be good. It's going to be garbage. And how could you possibly fuck up? Can I say it? Or
How
can you possibly fuck up The Dark Tower?
Yeah, no, the two series. One is Stephen King's The Dark Tower, which is a seven-book series. Then the other is George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, which has been adapted. Everybody knows it as Game of Thrones. Don, you read the Game of Thrones books when? Like in the 90s when they came out?
Yeah, I think it was a little later than that. I think it was around 2000.
Okay.
I had a friend who recommended the books to me, and I wasn't a fantasy reader ever.
Oh, really?
Which is weird.
Because you've told me stories about how much you used to read when you were in middle school.
But it was all sci-fi.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
And like hard, like real science fiction.
Right. Like Dune is still your favorite.
Like Dune is a Bible to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I'll meet new people, and I will just start talking about Dune, and I can The eyes will glaze over, and I can tell, you know, and then I'll convince someone to read the fucking thing, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's just like a book about a kid and his
with psychic powers or something.
And I'm like, you fucker, the secrets to life are in this book. It's an allegory for everything that we live. But whatever.
Well, that might be the next big adaptation, man, is Dune.
So I hope it's done right.
Denis Villeneuve, I always screw up his name, but the guy who did Arrival and the new Blade Runner is supposedly working on it. So
Arrival makes me trust him because that was a great movie,
mm-hmm.
right? But
but anyway, so you're reading a lot of sci-fi as a kid.
Reading a lot of sci-fi.
Somebody recommends these fantasy books.
Someone recommends these fantasy books. And it was really, other than Lord of the Rings, right, mm-hmm. because, you know, even people who aren't a nerd wind up reading Lord of the Rings at some point. Other than Lord of the Rings, it was the first fantasy thing I ever read.
Mm-hmm.
So it ruined me completely.
You assume that
because
they're all
it's
that
so,
good, right?
I was like, oh my God, I've been missing out. This shit is amazing. So I went and picked up like an R.A. Salvatore book, and I'm like, ugh.
No good. I don't even know who that is.
Garbage. He writes like Forgotten Realms, like Dritz the Elf and shit. I mean, it's fucking horrible. But good for the genre.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Second best. And then first, there's an enormous canyon because the Game of Thrones. And it's so complex. And, I mean, it makes House of Cards look like General Hospital.
It does, yeah.
For its complexity of its characters and the backstabbing.
You know, I heard this recently. Barack Obama apparently said he learned more about politics from Game of Thrones than he did at Harvard.
Yeah, not shocking.
Yeah. But anyway, we won't go any farther than that.
You knew.
I knew that was coming, but I had to say it.
Why didn't you ever tell me that before?
Well, I just heard it recently, like literally like last week. But
amazing.
The series comes along because I read the books about, it sounds like about 5 years after you did. Another friend recommended them to me and I picked them up, and it took me like a year to get through the first book. It's because he throws you right into it. There's no explanation for anything. Yeah. But once you are into it, it just goes down like pudding. I finished the first book, went out, bought the second book, read that in a week.
Yep.
Third book, read that in a week. And then right then the fourth book had come out. So I like went to the library and requested it. And as soon as it came out, I finished that. And that was that took me a little longer because I started to slow down a little bit at that point.
I smashed the first three books on a reread, right? And in like a week, like all three. And I just didn't, it was when I worked a lot less, obviously, right?
Yeah.
I would work, I would read it on my lunch break, and then I would just sit and I didn't sleep. And it's so good. But there's a strong line of demarcation, right, between the first three and then everything that came after it.
Yeah. Well, and we're still waiting for the last two. He's going to die. Yeah.
He's going to die. It's a good thing that the show is a good adaptation because we'll get the end of the story, right? Mm-hmm. And it will be relatively satisfying. And if those books ever come out, they will be extremely disappointing.
Yeah. Because they're already really deviating from what really the TV series did anyway.
How often do people describe it that way, right? These books are really deviating from the TV.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, what I was about to say is like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like you said, nobody would have thought this is even – you could even adapt this into a TV series or anything. Right. And now it has – I don't think I've ever in my life had something that I loved this much in book form, and then it gets adapted not only perfectly, but they make it better in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I would say – After like the third-ish season, like relative to the books, it's better.
Yes, and that's that again. Right? Like you said, the line of demarcation.
And it's because of that, because the books turn to shit. Uh-huh. And I would hate to have been the writer, you know, the writing team, and have to sit down and be like, God,
how do we make this interesting?
Books go to hell. What the fuck do we do with this? Nobody. What are we gonna have? Three seasons of nothing but Cersei Lannister fucking wandering around.
Yeah, dealing with the High Septon. And so, they even made that awesome.
And it was horrible.
Yeah.
And they made it awesome. So it's good TV. And I think you're absolutely right. No one would have believed that a TV show would ever have a budget like this.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Two, that a TV show would be so well accepted, like in terms of elite level of popularity for the actors.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like that guy what's the guy's name that plays Jon Snow?
Kit Harington, I believe is how you pronounce
it. That dude has got gold all over him.
Oh, yeah. He'll be
around. Like that guy is going to be the next fucking huge movie star. That dude's got presence like no one.
Right? I would like to see his range. Like, because now that he's played, he's Jon Snow, you know, that's who you think of him as. I want to see if he can do anything other than broody, you know.
Yeah, I hope he can.
And then you have there are so few characters that have been as beloved as Tyrion Lannister. To have the guy who he's the actor that everyone wanted for him the show, and then he nails it.
Yes. Like as good as Robert Downey Jr. is as Iron Man.
Yeah, that's a really good
He's even better as Tyrion Lannister, like Peter Dinklage is was born, and he looks nothing like Peter Dinklage is a handsome motherfucker.
He is, yeah. Tyrion is an ugly dude.
Tyrion is supposed to be hideous, not I mean like revolting looking, like demonish.
Especially after he gets his nose cut off.
Yeah. And like when they said Peter, you know, because everybody wanted Peter Dinklage to do it because like that's really the only guy that you can think of that is a great actor that is a person of what is the proper?
I think the actual term is dwarf is what they use.
It feels dirty. I'm just going to say a person of smaller stature because I feel like it's new.
Yeah.
It's not offensive yet. But like he's just way too handsome.
Uh-huh.
Right? I mean
I completely agree with you, man.
But he just owns that thing so well. It's amazing. I'm kind of going to be sad because I really hope I hope he goes on to have like a lead in some other kind of show.
Oh, he's already his career has completely taken off. He's getting roles now that it's not he's because he's a person of smaller stature. He doesn't get cast as that anymore.
It's catching it'll just, on, folks.
Yeah, it'll just be like we need, you know, he played the bad guy in one of those X-Men movies.
Yeah,
and that could have been played by a person of regular height, you know. And they were like, well, we want Peter Dinklage for this.
He's great. I love everything he does. I love everything he's ever been in, even Elf.
Yep, that was the first thing I knew him from. That was the very first thing I ever saw him in. And yeah, he's got presence, man.
He does. And he just nails it so good. And no one, it completely, on a reread of the books, it completely altered. Like, there's like a black hole that opens up on the page when George R. R. Martin describes what he looks like, uh-huh. and that just gets tossed because it
you
is
just
Peter
see
Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage, right?
You know, and you can't say that for anyone else in the show. Maybe Jon Snow a little bit, but
Dinklage is great, but the rest of the casting was damn solid. Everybody does an awesome job.
There's no one that is really standout bad.
No.
And I don't think
you
can
say
that.
But there's weaker than in comparison to other people.
I don't think you can say that about another show.
Not that I know of, especially like I was saying before, that was adapted from a universally beloved series.
Hands down, you can't. So there's nothing even close.
Well, we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk about another beloved
series. So that was the opposite of the theme of the show, right? We were heaping praise on something. There was no whining there.
No, there wasn't. It's great. Kind of a – but I wanted to talk with you about Game of Thrones on air.
You dragged positivity out of me.
It's
fucking amazing.
Awesome, man. And we got it recorded too. So,
play it at my funeral, would you?
we're gonna take a 10-minute break here, play some music. And we will be back in just under 10 minutes. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how – the recent Dark Tower adaptation is the mirror opposite of a good of what Game of Thrones is and how that worked out. So we'll be right back. American Whiner on podcastdetroit.com. We are back. My name is Alex. I'm here with my good friend Don Woolley. Turn the music down. There we go. All right. So, Don, what do you want to whine about?
I want to whine about how fucking awful the Dark Tower adaptation was.
Yes. Okay, so we both love this series. In fact, I remember one of the first times I ever talked to you, you commented on my Facebook. I had put up a picture of Shardik, the guardian of the beam, the mechanical bear. And you commented on it, and you were like, guardian of the beam, where'd you? And I was like, no fucking way, you know the Dark Tower. And so that was one of the first sort of bonding moments we had or whatever. And for people that don't know, the Dark Tower is Stephen King's Song of Ice and Fire, essentially. It's a I think people call it a fantasy series, don't they?
They do, but I mean it's
there's so many different things going on in it that you know. it's a Western. It's like there's elements of sci-fi. I mean obviously sci-fi and horror. Stephen King's usual thing. And it's 7 books long, which is what a Song of Ice and Fire is allegedly going to be if it ever gets finished.
Allegedly.
And it's about a guy named Roland Deschain. And Roland Deschain is like this Clint Eastwood-esque cowboy figure. He's called a gunslinger. And a gunslinger is basically the equivalent of a knight in this world that that Roland inhabits, which is called Midworld, which is kind of like this weird post-apocalyptic alternate dimension version of our Earth. And it's about him. The entire series is basically about him chasing this guy, this person called the Man in Black. The Man in Black's name is Walter. It's him chasing this Walter across time and space, trying to protect this structure called the Dark Tower, which is, according to Roland, holds the universe together. Did I explain? I feel like you can explain this better than me. So
no, you're doing a good job.
Do you think is there anything? But the thing is, like, that's sort of the linear progression of it. There are so many different fucking things going on.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how much is going on. In fact, there's so much going on. You almost just have to jump into it and read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then because there's like maps out there that show because every one of Stephen King's books connects to the Dark Tower.
That's right.
So what you started to get a feel for with that series is that Stephen King's writing wasn't just here's a bunch of individual books. Like, everybody knew that, you know, in some books they would talk about the town Derry, mm-hmm. right? Or they'd talk about Castle Rock and things. But, like, his books were an entire cosmology all together. And all of the fucked up shit that happens that's supernatural and weird in his books is because this dark tower is falling apart. Reality is essentially being attacked from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these fucked up weird things are, in fact, happening because of the reality between worlds sort of starting to get a little loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
And then you find out things like Firestarter, right? Like the government program that made that guy and his daughter, they were actually the people that Roland is fighting.
Yeah, the Tahin or Ta.
The Lowmen.
The Lowmen, yeah. Yep. The clown in It is a
Pennywise
creature from
creature from Todash space.
Yep.
Right, which is outside of reality where evil demons live that want to come in and kill everyone. They have this magical quality to them, those books. Right?
It is, but it's like the perfect blend of he adds just enough of like familiarity and yes. like in the very first book. There, it's almost like a dream. I think that I have this theory that this series was strung together was a bunch of Stephen King's dreams strung together, and that's
okay.
It was because in the very first book, it takes place. He doesn't really explain where you are. You're just in this desert, and the very first line of the series is iconic. It's the man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed.
Yeah, not a tattoo guy, but.
But if you
it
were.
It has been fucking considered many times.
That's actually a good idea. Me neither, but that's one I would definitely.
There are only a few. And man, I'll tell you what. The man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed is probably going to be mounted on my body permanently someday. Forehead, probably.
Yeah. Where was I going with that? But in the first book, he comes across this little town called Tull, and we just played a Jethro Tull song, so that's kind of funny, which is where Stephen King got the name for the town.
Correct.
And the townspeople are gathered in this square, in this tavern, and they're singing Hey Jude. And so it's this weird like combination of the Old West and King Arthur's England or Europe, and there's all these sort of nods to modern pop culture thrown in.
It's so cool and it's so unique, you know, and it feels maybe a little less unique now because like all great things, it's influenced things that come after it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And he's taken things, it's influenced things, and then he has taken those things and put them into the series because it took him 20 years to write.
It comes full circle. Yeah, that's important to mention is that I think the first book came out in the
81. Yeah.
So it came out
around then.
It was 1981 because that's the year I was born.
Okay.
So the first book came out then. He didn't finish that until 2008 or
2004 is when the last one came out, which is called The Dark Tower.
Fucking A, man. And it took forever. So I read these books and then I waited and waited and waited. And then The Wizard in Glass came out.
Mm-hmm.
And
which was 97.
Very different feeling, right? But still very cool. And it amped up the sort of magical feel because you get a sense of where Roland came from.
Yeah, well, that's the whole book is because you got the first three that are basically the progressive journey of from where Roland starts from.
Correct.
When you first meet up with him. Then he gets his quartet together, which is his group of allies. And the first three books is actually, we were just saying over the break, it's very similar to the Song of Ice and Fire because the first three books are just nothing but pure linear action.
Yes.
And it is the most engaging thing ever. And then the fourth book is
such good storytelling.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just master.
The world building is incredible.
Yes.
But the fourth book is basically Roland sitting and telling his quartet where he came from and who he is.
Yeah.
And then the last three books are King basically was like, okay, I got to wrap this up. Otherwise it's never going to get done.
And he plays with, Golden Snitches from Harry Potter.
He does. That's what I meant about the Harry Potter came out, you know, the first Harry Potter came out, 96? That's, you know, 14, 15 years after the first one. And then in the fifth Dark Tower book, there's references to Doctor Doom from Marvel.
Yeah, it's weird, and, man.
Yeah.
I was reading it and I'm thinking, did this jump the shark?
Yeah. Yeah, because for you, you'd been waiting for so long in between books.
And it was so weird, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think this motherfucker just jumped the shark. But the book was good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Stephen King shows up in the book.
In the sixth book, yes. He is a character in his own fantasy series. Yes.
Normally, like, the height of masturbatory fucking, but you know,
but it works.
It works. It's fine. Yeah. It even years later when I reread the whole series again, and in fact, I'll tell everyone if you're listening to us and you're thinking of reading this, at the end of the last book, Stephen King tells you there's like 30 pages left, right? And
yeah.
Stephen King comes in and says, "Don't read what's about to come next," and everyone I know has read it.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. You can't not. I mean.
And I'm telling you, if you want some level of satisfaction, give yourself a week until you read those last pages. Right. Let the end be the end, and then go back and read what he actually wrote. Right. Because he tells you to stop. So listen to him.
Yeah. There's kind of one. It's like Lord of the Rings, the Lord of the Rings movies. There's sort of like one ending, and then he gives you a little disclaimer and says, okay. That's the ending if
that's
you want
the way
it to
it
be.
Be.
But if you want to, you can keep reading it. And here's the rest of the story. So.
Yeah, and prepare to be real sad.
It's a mind fuck, yeah.
And disappointed. And there was no other way to do it, though.
Yeah.
But I will say,
that's why, dude,
he warned me.
Yeah, he did.
He told me to put the fucking book down.
I give him credit because that was one hell of a risk that he took with that. And I think for me, the whole cyclical nature of it
makes
was
sense.
It
if
was
you think
perfect.
About it,
yeah.
If you think about it, I'm not going to ruin it, but if you think about it, it completely makes sense because he's basically telling you the entire time that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just don't want to believe it, right? So, but anyway, so that's what the books are about.
Now, I was about to say, and I'll segue into the movie with this. I didn't have to wait for the books because I started reading it in about 2003.
Okay.
And so the last one was released in 2004. So I read all the first three, and then I read Wizard and Glass, and it took me maybe about 6 years to finish it. And I just kind of did it on my own pace.
Gotcha.
Loved it. It's one of my favorite series. I have it on top of my hutch at home. But what I was waiting for was the movie adaptation, and we've been told that we were going to get one since I read it. It was the first. Yeah. It was Russell Crowe was going to play Roland, and then Javier Bardem was going to play
it.
Can
you imagine if it would have been Javier?
That would have been awesome.
Not that I dislike Idris Elba, but
yeah. Well, anyway, this that was your first clue, is that it was taking so fucking long and it was changing
it was
hands.
Howard, remember, it was going to be Ron
He's still
Howard.
Involved with it. He got a producer credit on this, believe it or not. But that's what happens when too many people, when a script changes hands that much, it's usually not a good sign.
Yeah.
When it takes that long to make a movie, it can be good. Mad Max Fury Road took years to make. But the difference is it was always the same guy at the head of it. George George Miller
was the same.
Yeah. Whereas this one just kept so, and it's freaking Sony too. So you know, they fuck
and
up
you
everything.
You can feel
so.
It when you're watching this turd.
Yeah.
Which I'm just gonna say, this is one of the worst fucking movies you will ever see.
Yeah, it was bad. I saw it yesterday, you saw it last week. It was it felt like a whole bunch of movies jammed together.
Yeah, it was absolutely awful. It wasn't even awful as a person who loves the source material. It's just legitimately a bad movie.
Yeah. If you jump in, you have absolutely no idea what the series is. If you don't know anything about it, you'd still be like, you know what it probably is like? The first Dune, directed by David Lynch, which was such a clusterfuck.
The theatrical release.
Yeah, theatrical release, yeah.
Not that the extended version is a good adaptation of Dune, but it is a much better movie. Right.
So what specifically is wrong with this movie? I'll let you go.
Okay.
I
have to address something sensitive about it, right? And I think you know what I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So in the realm of science fiction and fantasy, there is legitimately the most startling lack of black female characters that are not throwaways. Okay? The Dark Tower series has probably the most amazing character progression for a female character, let alone a female black character, in anything I've ever read. And the character's amazing.
Her name is Susanna. Well, that's her. That becomes her name.
Susan, yeah. Or Susanna Odetta.
Well, it was Detta Walker was the Detta evil. Because she starts off with his two personalities. But
it's
we won't
complex,
get into that.
Right?
Yeah.
But Susanna, right, is
who she becomes.
Is absolutely the character progression of her is one of the most rewarding things in that series of books.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost no character progression for Roland, right? He is
– He wants one thing the whole way through the series.
He is a cold machine the entire time with only a few breaks, a few little cracks showing through that. And it is one of the very few things that you'll read that the race of the characters is actually important.
Yes.
And I'm not going to go like too far into that, but it is – The relationship between two characters that aren't even in the movie, Susanna and Eddie Dean.
Who's right? part of Roland's quartet, which is also includes, by the way, Jake Chambers, who was in the
who
movie.
Who is in the movie,
the
and,
kid.
And Roland. So the relationship between all of them is so important, and a big aspect of that is that, you know, they're two – she's trapped. She's from the civil rights struggle era South,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the people are from all different times and places in the books. And she is trapped in the middle of this broken world with two, I mean, essentially a guy that dropped out of a Western, right? Who, and like a drug addict from 1980s New York.
Yeah.
So like that is a really rewarding thing. And I love Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I would have rather that they put a wig on him and make him Susanna.
Oh, really?
That, yes. But I love the guy. He's great. He's good in everything he's ever done.
Yeah. He's one of those actors who's good, even when the movie he's in is not very
absolutely.
Good.
He's good in
including
everything he's
this
ever
one,
done.
To be
he
honest.
He brings weight. He was one of the few good things. Now, talk about wasting a sure thing. You have Matthew McConaughey who. You know, despite like Fool's Gold and all the things that we hate about, you know, Matthew McConaughey from 10 years ago, is amazing these days, right? He can make a Lincoln commercial cool, okay? No, Lincolns aren't cool. Their fucking commercials aren't cool. He made a Lincoln commercial cool. And then you have Idris Elba, who's undoubtedly one of the coolest on-screen presences that is of the modern era, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have these two fucking guys together, and they could not save this turd. So they completely wiped away one of the most important aspects of the story, and they ignored an opportunity to legitimately have a character that would have punched all the buttons that everyone's looking for.
Right now with regards to race in America.
But I mean, just in terms of like a group of people out there who want to see themselves in a movie.
Right?
Like there are, I'm sure, a lot of African-American females in the country who would love to see a movie where someone who's like them goes through a struggle and is the hero of the story, basically.
Yeah.
And they completely wipe that away just so they can say, hey, look, we made the gunslinger black.
Yeah. And if you have a problem with it, you're a racist.
And if it would have been good, that would have been one thing. If they would have utilized that amazing talent of that guy and saved the movie and made it good, then you couldn't fault them for it. But they didn't. They did it, and the whole thing's a fucking shit show.
Yeah, it was a complete throwaway.
Completely throwaway move. And the only thing it was done for was to generate controversy. Not that he's not amazing and I don't love him, and he was the only good part of the movie.
Yeah, actually, I have to say I didn't hate McConaughey there. I went in expecting to hate McConaughey as Walter, even though when I first heard he was cast as him, I was like, this is perfect casting.
Oh, I thought so too.
But then I saw the trailers and I was like, wow, he's really hamming it up. And I thought he was better than I was expecting.
I thought he did well with the source material that he was given.
Exactly. And you know what? It's in regards to this being a throwaway, if – it really sucks because you can see how both of them play could have been good in their characters if the script had been better and if the direction had been better and if they weren't
especially
certain if Jake had been better. With all due respect to the kid, it's never the kid's fault. But
no, it takes a good director to rip a good performance out of a kid. It's not a 12-year-old's fault.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even completely lay the blame at the director's feet either, because he got a hold of this after 10 years of development for this.
Well, and you know that the suits – you can feel
that was a total like, okay, here's what's going to happen. I guarantee you when they gave it to him, I can just see the meeting. They're like, you know, we're going to give you your shot, right? And here's what we need you to do. We're going to make it from the kid's perspective. The kids will love this shit. We need to make it from the kid's perspective so the kids go to see it, all right? Can't make it R-rated because that would be too scary for them. We're going to make the gunslinger, have him played by Idris Elba. Because you know that'll bring in another demographic, and then we got McConaughey as the bad guy.
Talk about missing the fucking mark. Can't make it R rated. I want a fucking X rated gunslinger. That's what I want.
Yeah. Well, it's again with Game of Thrones. Like, they made Game of Thrones hard R, and that's what the Dark Tower is, just as violent.
And probably
a lot more twisted.
There's even some more disturbing things, especially in the first book, right? With the
It was just a complete missed opportunity. I guarantee you there will be a good adaptation at some point. But and I'm, I think yes. people will look at this, like I said, like David Lynch's Dune.
I would have disagreed if Game of Thrones hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like this poisoned the well.
Mm-hmm.
But because the source material is so rich, and because Game of Thrones has made so much money. Right, I know someone's going to put their foot back in that.
Dip
their toe in there.
Somebody's looking, because you know HBO's got their Game of Thrones now. So now Netflix is like, what's our Game of Thrones going to be? What's another network that's doing Amazon? Amazon does it now. Amazon's going to be like,
if Netflix tackles Gunslinger.
Yeah,
I'll forgive them for so many things that they've
done. It's really a shame because it is so good. The series is so good, and the movie was so just – I mean, bad doesn't even really begin to describe it. And you know what, dude? It's really sad is the main thing I got out of it. It just felt like they threw this together because they're like, whatever, we have the IP. We need to make the money off of this. We've lost so much money for working on it for as long as we have. Whatever. Here it is, kids. And
I mean, it's hard to even – describe why it's so bad, because literally everything is awful.
Yeah, well, it feels like they throw you right. The first thing you see is something that doesn't even get revealed until the sixth book, I believe.
Right.
And you see the tower, and you don't see the tower in the series until the last pages of the last book.
Right. But I mean, there's imagery that no one knows. It doesn't set anything up. You know, they could have made for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
They could have made
the first book. Yep.
And if they would have had Idris Elba and even that kid and Matthew McConaughey,
it would have worked. It would have worked fine.
Amazing.
Yes.
And if we never got another movie, that would have been fine.
Yeah.
Right? They fucking have their meeting at the campfire at the end of the book, and then that's it.
The interplay during that series
scene
with even with Elba and McConaughey, that would have been an amazing opportunity to show their chops off.
There's an opportunity there if you remember the scene where he's describing to Roland. He like pries Roland's mind open and shows him the universe.
Mm-hmm.
There is an opportunity there for a Stanley Kubrick 2001-esque special effects sequence that could have been like
the ultimate climax,
something that defined a generation, the same way that the acid trip from the end of 2001 did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they completely lost it; they missed it.
No, and it's just like you just said, that probably would have been so much cheaper than what they did.
It would have cost a third. What special effects are there other than maybe some practical ones for the gunslinger being the gunslinger?
Yeah, well, you got the slow mutants. You've got the sequence within the grove with the demon or whatever who tries to fuck Roland.
I think she tries to fuck Jake, doesn't she? I want my X-rated.
Yeah, right. They do that multiple times throughout the series.
Yeah, he fucks demons all the time.
Yeah.
Want to see some demon sex.
Dude, that is such a – but I guarantee you, we're sitting here talking about it. Someone else is too, and somebody else is going like, this is how it should be done. You can – you know, you do this series right, this is your Game of Thrones. You have a legendary adaptation of a legendary fantasy series.
Exactly.
And that this will continue to make you money for generations.
Billions.
Yes.
They'll make billions of dollars on it if they do it right. You know, this thing would have been word of mouth alone. Mm-hmm. Could have made a lot of money if it had just been done right.
Yeah.
I would really like to see like an art house version of the first movie, mm-hmm. just to get things rolling. You know what I mean? Just like something with really artistic shots of the desert, you know.
Very scenic, very atmospheric.
Yeah, there's like flashbacks within flashbacks, and I'd love to see someone with a lot of, you know, artistic gravitas cinematically tackle that book, because it could be a very boring movie if it's done
wrong.
You know, like if Michael Bay tried to do the first book.
Yeah. He's like, we got to blow. It's been too long. We're going to blow something up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The sand blows up in the desert. Yeah. Like the donkey blows up. And
the raven blows
the
up.
The raven blows up.
The slow
up.
Mutants blow up. The fucking, you know.
The farmer blows
yeah.
up.
But yeah, it's a, I guarantee you that somebody will. Yeah. Eventually get that right, but we're running out of time here. Right. We are coming up on our hour, so I'm gonna wrap it up.
To whine about that?
No, man. Thanks for coming on. This has been one of my favorite whining sessions because I know so much about it that I was actually able to participate and not worry about not sounding like I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah, man, we will definitely have you on again, obviously, and I will let you know when that happens. My name's Alex. I will be back on Monday. I already have a guest lined up. Very excited about that. He'll be Skyping in. And we will be rejoining you then. So I guess that's pretty much it. The name of the show is American Winery. We are on podcastdetroit.com. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a great weekend.